Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This is the best of the Eagles on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
33 seconds to go. And Pickett will take the football and take the knee. And that's going to round it up. We will count down these seconds for you.
That'll do it, boys
and
girls.
They are jamming the field. 18, 17, 16. 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's over. The Philadelphia Eagles have won Super Bowl 59. They have beaten the Kansas City Chiefs 40-22. It's their second Super Bowl win in 7 years. What a game. What a season. What a team. The greatest Eagles team in modern history. Eagles fans, savor it and rejoice.
Oh, I love it. On this Friday morning. Probably weren't expecting that. Because, you know, we haven't played in like 2 or 3 months. But we're making the turn really soon to a coming Eagles season. At least training camp variety, 11 days away. And the Diddy, of course, will be all over it. We love having Ray Diddy on the show. And we had a turn to Ray, it feels like, in, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months? I mean, maybe as far back as the NFL draft. I'm really not sure. But it's always a good day to talk to the legend, the Hall of Famer, Mr. Ray Diddinger. Ray Diddy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Joe. You're right. It's been a while. It was, I think the last time I was on with you was, like, right after the draft. And then
probably, yeah.
And I think that was it. We went back and we did a look at the draft and, of course, look at the season and just savored it. And I think the last thing I said to you was I was urging all the fans to just enjoy. Just enjoy. You know, there's time enough down the road to worry about defending your championship. This offseason was about enjoying it. And I heard Merle's statement about this is the greatest Eagles team in modern history, and that's what you got. I mean, you really do. I mean, you are number one, and it hasn't been very often, if ever, in the history of Eagles football that their fan base could say that legitimately,
sure,
that you're the best team in the league. But they were, and so hopefully the fans enjoyed it in the off season because, you know, you're right. Less than 2 weeks away, they go to training camp, and the challenge begins anew.
Sure does. So, Ray, speaking of messages to fans, before I get to that, how are you? Because we haven't talked in a while. How's life?
Great. I've had a really fun offseason, very, very busy offseason. I was just telling James I finished the rewrite and revision of the Eagles Encyclopedia.
Good. That's great.
I went four. This is the fourth edition.
Nice.
It wasn't in the plans. I mean, we hadn't. I wasn't planning to do another one, but the Eagles sort of changed things by winning another Super Bowl. So I had to go back and update it. I had to turn. I was telling James I had to turn a 561-page book around in 5 weeks. So,
oh my good Lord!
So that was made for a very busy off season, and I wrote another play. So I've kept myself busy.
Good for you. When is the book available? Is it currently available, or is that in the next couple months?
You can pre-order it if you go to Amazon. The title of this one is Eagles Encyclopedia Champions 2, Roman
wow.
numeral 2.
Love it.
You can find it on Amazon, and you can go and pre-order it, and it will be available in October, early October. But you
did
can
you?
Pre-order
that's
it
wonderful,
now.
Ray. Did you change the cover? Which was last time the last parade? Is it a different parade photo, or what do you have on the cover now?
We talked about it. I loved the last cover. I loved the parade cover because I thought when they finally won the Super Bowl, I really thought the story of that winning the Super Bowl, I mean, yes, it was about the team, and yes, it was about the players, and it was about Foles, and it was about you know, all of that. But I thought on a larger scale, it was about the city and what it meant to the city and what it meant to this fan base. It had never had that moment before. And so I argued very strongly for, you know, I think the cover should be a photo with a parade and just show everybody enjoying this. Because I thought the city celebration and what it meant to the fans was a big part of the story. So we went with that on the cover, and I thought it was a great cover. And we could have done that again, because certainly there were a lot of fan pictures and a great parade this year. But I said I thought there was one image of this season that sort of defined the season. And I thought it was the Barkley Leap. And so that's what's on the cover of the book.
You know what's so funny about that, Ray? I have the same exact photo on the cover of my book. I hear you. And that's awesome. And that'll obviously denote to people, and this is key for your book, hey, this is a new edition. Like, just in case they miss certain words on the cover, hey, this is updated. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really wise choice. Well, Ray, we want to encourage everyone that's listening right now, because I have the prior edition. This is going to be spectacular plus. So everyone listening, what a great gift this will make for someone that you love or to buy for yourself. Pre-order now, or, of course, get it, you know, October, November, December, in the lead-up to the holiday season. Amazon.com, Ray's book. That is awesome. All right, Ray, let's talk about the coming season. So you had a message that you said there early in this discussion about what you said a few months ago to fans. What would be your message to fans, to listeners now, overarching message from the Ditty to the masses about the coming season, what they should think and what they should have in mind?
Well, I would say two things. Number one, this is the first time in my experience being around this team, which is more than half a century. But you can honestly, truthfully say, put fandom aside and just look at realistic, what's real, and say you're going into this season as the best team in football. You know, I mean, you never said that before. I mean, they had teams that came off Super Bowls before. But going into the next season, very few people were saying, yeah, this is the team. You know, it just wasn't the case. Well, it is now. They're the best. And I think you talk to anybody around the league, they will say that. Even with free agency and even with the people that you lost, this is still the best team. I really do believe that. So you've never been in this position before where you are number uno going into the season on the eve of training camp. But you are now. So that's a good place to start. The other part of it is understand the challenge you are undertaking. Because the Eagles have come off four Super Bowls before, and the next season has always been a time, you know, a very bumpy that next year. They've never even gotten back to a championship game in that next year. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard to do back-to-back. And the league doesn't make it easy for you. I think their schedule is brutal.
It is
brutal. The way it lays out is brutal. I'd have to look this up. I can't remember a championship team that has ever gone into the following season and never had back-to-back home games on their schedule. I mean, that's crazy. I don't think we've ever dealt that to a
Super
Bowl champ.
It's never happened. This is the first time the Super Bowl champ has not had back-to-back home games.
Well, that's what I thought, James. I mean, I didn't go all the way back to the Decatur Staleys in my research, but I mean, in terms of what we call modern history, I don't ever remember it happening. So that's a challenge. The schedule's crazy. They're playing Mondays. They're playing Thursdays. They're playing Fridays, Saturdays. It's going to be a really weird season. They're going to have to deal with hard knocks. They're going to have to deal with the cameras in the meeting rooms, the cameras in the locker rooms, and we know how that's affected some teams. So that's going to be a challenge. You got a lot of teams with revenge that are coming after you. The Rams were going to be a challenge. Washington are going to be a challenge. Week two, you're going to have Kansas City. You're going to be walking into Arrowhead. I mean, it is a very, very tough schedule. But, I mean, right now I think they've got the best team, and we'll just see how they deal with it.
Ray, I think one of the more interesting dynamics going into the season is the relationship between Nick Sirianni and Kevin Petullo. And there's potential upside there, and there's potential downside there. If it's not going well and people are second-guessing the play calling, the hammer, pardon the phrase, will come down on Sirianni. Because most people believe, and I think rightfully so, he was the moving force in Petullo getting this job. Likes the guy, coming off a Super Bowl victory. You're going to give the coach what he wants. If Petullo isn't great, will he be second-guessed? If the Eagle offense isn't producing the way it's supposed to, will it fall at Kevin Petullo's footsteps, or will it fall at the guy who basically handed him the job?
I think both. I think they'll be a big. I think they will be a big microscope on Petullo because he's being put in a position that he's never been before, where he's been the main play caller. He and Nick have history. I mean, they worked together in Indianapolis. They seem to have a really good relationship. But that's one of the things that if you have a worry, and it's Jody, it's you put your finger right on the thing that I've been thinking about a lot as we get close to training camp and the start of the season is that whole thing, is that new offensive coordinator thing. Because the Eagles coming off Super Bowls before have lost offensive coordinators, and it's always hurt them. And now you're going to have to make that same transition again, and is this one going to go better? And it's going to be a challenge right from the start. I mean, initially, even if Kevin Petullo is really good, even if he has a really good relationship with Jalen Hurts and everything is kind of simpatico, there's still going to be that adjustment period. There's still going to be that early in the season, they're still going to be working things out. And the early part of the season doesn't give you any slack. I mean, you open with the Cowboys, and people say it's going to be an easy game. Oh, okay, is it? I don't know. I mean, and then the next three games to me are just killers. I mean, you got to go play Kansas City in week two. You got to play the Rams in week three, who are coming off double revenge against you and almost ended your season last year. And then you got to go to Tampa to play the Bucs, and the Eagles never win in Tampa. So the challenge is going to be there for everybody at the start of the season just because of the way the schedule lays out. But I think the biggest focus is going to be on the quarterback and the offensive coordinator and how their relationship. And it would be nice if you had three or four fairly easy games early in the season to kind of work through the kinks and figure everything out and then hit the tough part of your schedule. But the fact is the tough part of your schedule is there from day one.
Yeah, KC week two really blows up that concept. Then again, the Eagles blew up KC, 4 months ago or so. And of course, great to hear the voice of the legend, Ray Diddy, who we hadn't talked in a while, talking some Eagles football here with us. Ray, let's talk about the parts of the team by way of the units. And I'm curious which unit you think will be stronger this year, the offense or the defense? The reality is you can normally just kind of tell. Now, you can look at stats, or you can have the eye test. And last year on either measurement, it was obvious the defense was better. But the defense has lost players. The offense is largely the same with the exception of Becton. Which unit this year do you expect to be stronger?
I would probably say the offense. And I think the defense has a lot of stuff that needs to work out. I mean, you got a lot of new faces. And I think they've got the people to do it. But I would say the offense. I mean, you're bringing back 10 of your 11 starters, and none of whom had like any surgery in the offseason, which is a big thing. I mean, that's rare. I mean, you're coming back and you got 10 of your 11 starters coming back, and they're all coming back healthy. None of them are coming in walking boots. None of them are coming in with the hospital band still on their wrist. I mean, they're all coming in healthy, and that's a huge plus. And, there is the issue with the offensive coordinator. But, I mean, offensively, I think they should be very good. And defensively, you're going to have to put some new pieces on the field, and you're going to have to find a way to make them work. But in Vic Fangio, you have a coach who's been doing that for 40 years. So I think they're going to be fine over there. But if you ask me right now which unit do I think is the strongest, yeah, I mean it's the offense. I mean, is there a concern about, Saquon Barkley this year? I don't know. I mean, some people have mentioned it to me, and, you look back. I mean, if you look at the season in total, in regular season plus postseason, I mean, the guy had 500 touches last year. How much is there a carryover of that? Now, if anybody can handle that kind of load and be whole after it, it's probably Saquon Barkley, but that's still a huge workload.
Sure is.
One of the things coming into this year is, how will Kevin Petullo and Nick Sirianni monitor Barkley over the course of this season? Dylan can probably share the load some because you lost Gainwell, but they're going to have to be a little bit careful with Barkley that they be aware of what he did last year, and yeah. don't necessarily ask him to do the same thing again this year. But the offensive line, which has been the power source for this team now for a long time, is still largely intact. I mean, they're going to replace Becton, but I think that the rest of those guys are so good. This team right now, the NFL game, over time, you do win in the trenches. I mean, it's a cliche. I mean, it's been going back forever, but it's been true forever. If you can't win there, you can't win.
Yeah.
And this team right now is the best in football at winning those battles. And listen, don't minimize the fact that they got a huge victory that I didn't think they were going to get in the league retaining the tush push. I mean, I did not think they were going to have that in the playbook coming into this year. I really thought the league was going to take it away. I was surprised, happily so, that it survived. And I don't know that it'll survive after this year. But they've got it for this year, and I think that, you know, in my view, they're 1-0 going into the season because that was a win I didn't think they were going to get.
I agree with you on that. Ray, let's talk about Jalen Hurts. So much is said, and much of it is complimentary. Some of it is critical. He obviously has done a remarkable job, I mean, to say the least, given the fact that he was a second-round pick and has led them to two Super Bowl appearances and one victory. But there's consternation there. You know it. You hear it. James Seltzer thinks he's the second-best quarterback in pro football right now. I think he's the fifth-best. And when I say fifth-best, people come down on me like I'm being disrespectful. Where do you come down on what Jalen is, what he'll become, and the conversation that surrounds the entire thing?
Well, I think he's become it. You know, the question you ask about any quarterback in any city in any situation is, can this guy win you a Super Bowl? That's where you start at that position. That you know, you look at that guy and you say, can this guy win me a Super Bowl? Well, he's answered that question. He got you there twice, and just a few months ago he won it and he was the MVP. And so that big question he's already answered. Now, is he everybody's idea of the ideal quarterback? Does he fit the quote-unquote prototype? Yeah, probably not. But the fact is that he does all the things that you need a quarterback to do to win games. And I would certainly put him, I would have him closer to 2 than 5 if I were rating. And I think that, you know, I mean, he has been a guy throughout. And you go back to Alabama, then you follow him to Oklahoma, then you come here. And the one thing that's been constant throughout, you know, coaches change, situations change, playbooks change. The one thing that doesn't change is the fact this guy wins. I mean, he wins. People shouldn't forget the fact that in the Super Bowl, you know, Steve Spagnuolo built his whole game plan in Kansas City. We're taking Barkley away.
Yeah.
We're not going to let Barkley run wild in this game. We're just not. We're going to see if Jalen Hurts can actually come into this game and win it. And he did. You know, everything you needed him to do in that game, he did. And even if you looked at the metrics of the passing, and I know people still question his accuracy and his is he a prototype quarterback? I mean, I had a big discussion with a guy a couple months ago who said that he would take Justin Herbert over Jalen Hurts right now. And I said, look, I like Justin Herbert, too. I mean, you're talking about the prototype quarterback. That's it. I mean, in terms of his size, in terms of his arm, in terms of his release, in terms of his mechanics, he's got all that. But he doesn't have what Jalen Hurts has. You know, he's not won a Super Bowl. I mean, understand what this guy is and appreciate him for what he is. And I think that, you know, I don't know in terms of, you know, is he ever going to lead the league in yards? You know, probably not. Is he ever going to lead the league in touchdown passes? You know, probably not. But the fact is, he's going to win you a ton of games, and he's proven that over time. And, you know, I think that winning that game last year and being the MVP and winning the game the way he won it and beating the team that he beat that was going for a third straight Super Bowl and beating the number one quarterback in Mahomes, I think that was huge for him. And I think he comes into this season feeling really good about himself and understanding the challenge, fully understanding the challenge. But I think he's ready for it.
Did he, when someone as well-respected as Ray Dinger comes on the WIP Morning Show and says the Philadelphia Eagles enter the season as the number one football team in the NFL and maybe have never done that before, that to me equates to a whole lot of expectations. that the bar is really high going into this season. And when you have those kind of expectations, it comes along with major pressure.
Sure.
Tell me why this team is up to handling maybe more pressure than the organization has ever handled before.
Well, that's everything you said there, is, Jody, is 100% true and accurate. And it is a position that this team has never been in before. The head coach has never faced this. The quarterback has never faced this. The ownership, the front office has never faced it. They're the best. They are number one going into the season. And all the challenges that you normally associate with that has fallen on other teams over the years. You know, going back to the Steelers and the Dolphins and, you know, more recently the Patriots and, you know, even more recently than that, the Chiefs, that have been in that position, none of them have found it easy. Some of them have been able to overcome it. But, I mean, and the fact is it starts with the offseason. You know, you lose coaches. I mean, you lost Kellen Moore. That's big. You know, you're drafting at the bottom of the draft, even though Howie Roseman does a really good job of working the board. Fact is, you're not picking 1, 2, 3. You're just not. That's not the way it's set up. And then the schedule comes out, and you know it's going to be tougher. And then there's just the human nature aspect of it. I mean, there's just the human nature aspect of it. I mean, you've had this off season to just celebrate and to just enjoy. And, you know, and you're getting the big ring. And, you know, guys are getting new contracts. And everywhere they go, there's the acclaim. But with that comes, you know, the next season rolls around, and now the expectation is there. Can you go do it again?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, really, really hard thing to do. And I've seen teams go through it. I've seen great teams go through it. And I think the coaches that have been best at handling it are the coaches that just deal with it honestly. And go to training camp and don't talk around it. I mean, don't pretend that it isn't there. You know, that elephant is in the room. And just be straight up with it. You know, hey, guys, everybody's coming out to get us. And look at the schedule. I mean, nobody's doing us any favors. But that's the challenge. But I think we have the team in this room that can go out and do it. And don't just try to say, oh, this is going to be like every other year. No, it's not. It's not. In no way will it be. The fact is that it's that great a challenge. But if people think that they have enough good players to overcome it, and I do, then just go out and do it. But if the challenge starts in, 11 days? And I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, it is going to be really, really tough. But I think this team is good enough to do it. And I think the quarterback is, if anything, I think the quarterback's looking forward to this challenge and proving that, you know, that he can be that guy once again, not just for one day, not just for one season, but for a career. I think he's ready to build on what he did last season. I really do.
Deep dive here with Ray on the Eagles, and we'll be doing a lot of this in the coming weeks, obviously. I mean, there's so much we won't get to today, but trying to get to as much as we can. So, Ray, I'm struck by something you have said a few times on the show here in the last 15 minutes. You have said a couple times they are number one. And you know, I want to take you inside something, an exchange James and I had about 2 weeks ago on the show. 2 weeks ago, I said the Eagles are not the champions. And James was not happy with me when I said that. And I said they're the defending champions. But I do not now consider the Eagles the champions. I consider them the defending champions. Now, this is like a philosophical question. And Plato, Socrates, and Aristotle could have had a field day with this one. But I'm returning to you. Are the Eagles the champions, or are they just now the defending champions? Because I hear you saying number one, and that can be interpreted two ways. That can be interpreted they currently have the best team in football as I project it, or they had the best team in football last year as proven on the field. So I'm just going to ask you this question. Are the Eagles the champions, and when are they not?
When somebody beats them. They're the champions until somebody knocks them off, and that doesn't happen until the end of the season. It has to play out.
So, do I disagree, Ray. So you're saying,
Ray,
if they're 3-5,
you're a wise man, Ray.
If they're 3-5, they're the champions? I mean, they're still eligible to make the playoffs, but they're the champions? That, to me, is
sure.
The defending champions.
No. No, you're the champion until you've been eliminated, until it's been taken, you know, until you're flat on the back, until you're flat on your back on the canvas and they've counted you out. You're the champ. I mean, that's just the way it works, and that's the way it should work. I mean, you've earned that. But I don't foresee that. I think this season is going to be tough. But the one thing, you know, the one thing that I when I think back over the four other times that this team has been in this position, coming off a Super Bowl, they only won it once, but they've been there four times. That next year tended to be a very unhappy year.
Yeah.
And I just, the feeling, that almost from the beginning, there was this feeling that, that things weren't quite right, that maybe we weren't the best team last year, but we kind of got there, and there wasn't this feeling of real confidence that we are all of that. That shouldn't be the case this year, because I think you are. But understand that in this town, with the focus that's on spotlight that's always on this team, with the expectation that's going to be following this team, with the fact that the whole league is gunning for you, and all of that, it's, you know, you have to understand that it's going to be. I just hope there's not a whole lot of drama. You know, I just hope that we can just concentrate on football. But listen, if they stumble out of the blocks this year, you know, if let's say they beat the Cowboys, but let's say they go to Kansas City and get whacked, and then they come home, which could happen. I mean, the Chiefs have been looking forward to this game since the day the schedule came out, and the Chiefs have not gone away. I mean, they're going to be ready for you week two, and then you got to play week three back home against the Rams, and the Rams had a really good offseason, and I think that they're going to be really good this year, and they're coming in here with something to prove too. And if somehow this team finds itself at 1-2, the whole mood of the city could shift, you know, and I would hate to see that happen. But you have to be prepared for what is going to be a very challenging offseason, what's going to come invariably with ups and downs, even as good as I think this team is. And I think just emotionally, we say the team has to be able to weather it, but I think the fans have to be able to weather it too, because the last times the Eagles have been in this position, now the T.O. year, you kind of have to take it out because the whole T.O. thing was a scenario unto itself.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Eagles have been in this position before, and that next year has tended to be a challenging and very, very contentious kind of year, which has accounted for the fact of why they weren't been able to do it back-to-back.
Absolutely.
They're going to have to be able to overcome it, but I think that this year they have the best personnel they've had to face that challenge.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do. I'll say this, Ray. I've made a point in my life to never disagree with you. I do disagree with you on the champions thing, and I'll cite two things. One is Jahad Campbell's not a champion in the NFL, and you know 15 or 20 other players that joined the team. And the other thing is I feel 1,000% confident that if I asked Nick Sirianni, are you the champions, he would say no. But listen, I could be wrong, but that's just my I
don't
think.
He's a player and a coach, though. They have to have a different mentality than what fans should have.
Guys, I mean, they go to training camp in 11 days.
They are the reigning champions.
They're the reigning champions until they're out.
No. I agree with that. They're the reigning champions. They're the defending champions. I don't believe the 2025 Eagles, which start in 11 days,
this are the champions. You're just talking semantics.
No, it's not semantics.
This is semantics.
No, it's not. The question was, are the Eagles the champions? I believe they are not.
They are.
But anyway, yeah. Okay.
You're down 0-4 here.
That's fine. I'll take it on. And maybe we'll talk about it in a future show. It's just the way I look at it. All right, Ray, final thing.
If they're not the champions, then who is?
Nobody.
Great question.
We've got a new year. It's a whole new year.
I could know going forward.
I think it ended.
What's the date?
Around March, April.
Around March, April. Good.
All right,
that's a real defined date. That's great.
Well, I mean, you know, free agency, the draft, like you're on to a new thing. That's the way I define it.
Okay.
Ray, final thing. Curious, you know, because you brought up a lot of examples where things can just get weird after you win. This is a weird one. Do you find it annoying and or a little potentially problematic that the ring ceremony, because the rings were delayed coming in, is not until I think it's 2 or 3 days before training camp, which is something a team normally gets out of the way way, way before training camp? Is that irritating, and is that potentially a little clunky?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, you get the ring when you get the ring. I don't think there's any prescribed right time or ideal time to do it. Just, I mean, that's. I've been to a couple of those ring ceremonies when I was at NFL Films. We used to shoot them, and they're something, boy. They really are. If you've been to one and you've seen it, and yet you never forget it. I mean, everybody knows it's happening. Everybody knows it's coming. you know, it's on the calendar. There's a big party. I remember Robert Kraft always used to have it. He used to pitch like his big tent outside his in the yard outside his house, and everybody would gather there, and it was beyond spectacular. And you know, everybody knows what they're coming there for. They're coming there to get their ring. But that moment when they hand it to you and you open it up, I mean, it's, you know, I've seen Brady get six of them, and he gets emotional every time. I mean, it's really what it's about. I mean, this is really what you've been playing for. And even if you've gotten 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, that moment when they hand it to you and you open it up and it's there, man, it is powerful. And when you're in the room and those guys get them, I mean, it is. If you've been there, you'll never forget. I swear you'll never forget it. And I kind of think it's cool that you're getting it right on the eve of training camp, because I think that is a huge jump start for this team, because right there on the eve of when all of the sweat and all the hard work and all the pain and all the and all the grief of training camp, what it brings, this is a wonderful thing to have right before you go. I actually think it kind of works in their favor. It'll be a great night for those guys. They've earned it. A lot of these guys, it's the first one. I think it's a tremendous thing to kind of get them jump-started going into what figures to be a very challenging season, but I think a season where this team has a chance to do something it hasn't done since the days of Steve Van Buren and Chuck Bednarik, and that's win it back-to-back. I think they have a chance to do it.
Ray, I know we have you on WIP for your football knowledge and expertise, but I need to know what we're watching. What's the best movie Ray Dittinger's seen?
Yes,
in 2025?
Great question, Jody.
I thought you were going to ask a Phillies question. That was a curveball right there.
The best movie I've seen. I went to see F1.
So good, week. Right, Ray?
I thought it was terrific. It. I mean, as a technical achievement, and by the way, I would say this, for anybody that's going to go see it in IMAX.
100%. Mm-hmm. And in the theater, if nothing else. Don't wait for it at home. Do not.
Yeah, don't wait to see it at home, because I don't care how good your home TV is. there's nothing like seeing F1 in IMAX. I mean, if you ever wondered what it's like to sit in the cockpit of a Formula One car, driving on the bank track at Monza in Italy, man, this movie takes you there. I mean, you feel it. I mean, you feel it, all of it. And you know, Brad Pitt, who I think is a really underrated actor. People think he's just a pretty boy, but I think he's a really good actor, and he's very good in this one. And the technical stuff, the cinematography, the sound, all of it is it's an achievement. I mean, even if you're not a racing fan, if you ever had the curiosity of what it feels like to be behind the wheel of a Formula One car, go see F1 and go see it in IMAX, and you will not be disappointed.
I couldn't agree more.
Let me say this.
Made by the director of Top Gun Maverick, too. Same
let
director.
Me say
exactly.
This.
And it has the same feel. If you saw Top Gun Maverick, all those flight scenes, all that aerial combat stuff, that's exactly what this is. He brought all of that same stuff, that you are there kind of feeling. He brought all of that to this and put it on the racetrack, and it's pretty spectacular.
Mr. Diddy, sir, the third thing that I largely disagree with you on today.
You didn't like F1?
I agree the technical stuff. I agree with all of that. The lack of character development is what made it such not Top Gun. I mean, Top Gun,
think Pitt was good?
No, I thought Pitt was great. He was great. Character development. Okay. The key to Top Gun, the original, was, you know, you got this guy and his father had died and he's fighting and he's trying to kind of, you know, come through that reality and be a fighter pilot. And like,
what's the same story for Brad Pitt's character in F1?
There was so much more character development in both Top Guns than this one. So I agree with you, Ray, on the visuals, the sounds. I agree with that. But I thought the movie dramatically lacked a lot. But anyway. All right, Diddy, wonderful. Wonderful catching up. We'll talk to you much more again soon, because we got to get inside the linebackers and the Kobe and all these guys. And so there's a ton to do. Ray, we'll do it in the coming weeks. Have a wonderful next few days. And everyone, buy Ray's book. Again, it's the Eagles Encyclopedia.
Pre-order.
Pre-order. Right. Eagles Encyclopedia Champions 2 edition with Saquon on the cover. And knowing what the first one was, I can guarantee people this is a true masterpiece that will live on forever in Philadelphia sports with the history of the Eagles going back to the very beginning. So please buy it. You'll love it. It makes a great gift for yourself or another. Ray, stay well, bud. We'll talk to you very soon.
Okay, look forward to it. Take care, guys.
You got it.
Thanks, Ray.
There he is, the Diddy. How dare I disagree with him on three different
things? Yeah, that was unbelievable.
It was.
I'm not trying to be a heel. I'm very happy to be on the same side as Ray on all three.
Well, James, we'll do a show in the coming weeks on when are they not the champions. Because I'm telling you, I do see it very different. I really, really do.
Wow, that was funny. What did you call yourself there?
I don't know what I said.
You said don't want to be a...
Heel.
Heel. Heel hammer. We've got Horny Hammer.
I like that.
We've got
Joey.
Horny Hammer. We've got Heel Hammer to add to the mix as well.
I like that. Has a nice ring to it.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Do you think the Eagles' defense can be even better than they were last year? I think they can be, especially when you look at the fact that they're bringing back all these young guys. Jalen Carter, another year coming back and developing in Vic Fangio's scheme. And what do you think, Hugh, as a former player, how much does it help players to be in a scheme for the year for over a year now and kind of know, especially for young guys, what to do and what not to do?
I feel pretty good about it. I think that what happened last year, a lot of it was probably condensed, and Vic probably gave them what he felt that they were comfortable with, and he probably, stalled more as the season progressed. Now you don't have to do that. Like, you got a lot of guys that are in this system, and they understand their role and everything. And it also kind of goes back to what Bryce Huff said early on. He said he kind of knew that it wasn't a fit early on, and I'm assuming what he meant by that was because of what he was asked to do or how he was asked to play at a certain position. And that's why Brandon became so prevalent in the defense in his 15th season. You know, Brandon was supposed to come out there and be like the backup, and he became more of the starter.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I think it was you have to understand the concept and how you fit in the defense. So that part of it you don't have to teach. So now you can add more stuff into the repertoire and into the playbook and everything, because everybody's kind of on the same page. Now you got to get the younger guys up to speed, the ones that are going to help contribute. But I think one of the good things that this Eagles defense has going for them, they're fairly young across the board.
Oh, really young? Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that's that, and they genuinely seem like they care for one another, man. You know, when you talk about the camaraderie that they have, the fact that, you know, they were down there at CI at Jason Kelsey's thing and things of that nature, I think all that stuff matters.
Just like you referenced earlier, just hopefully not too much fun this offseason.
Well, man, it's inevitable. You know? I mean, let's be honest.
It's hard after you win a championship.
I mean, it's be honest. It's inevitable. You won a championship. You're on everybody's radar. You just have to know that everybody does not have your best interest in mind. You know what I mean? Because they don't know what it is to sacrifice to get to where you got to. You know, especially, and let's be honest, for young men, the biggest pitfall for young men is young women, you know, and opening yourself up to all of that. So you just have to stay focused, and you just have to know, keep your eye on the prize, man.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of celebrating to do, and the Eagles have sure done that. Hopefully it doesn't affect them on the field this year. I don't think it will. I think the defense specifically will be really good, and I'm excited to see what it looks like this year for sure.
In what world, TK?
Yeah?
Is the defense going to be better than it was last year?
What do you mean, in what world?
How can you come to that conclusion?
Because they have great players on their defense. Jalen Carter, Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, Zach Bond, all those guys are still here, Kyle.
I'm not saying they're going to be a bad defense, but did you see how good they were last year?
They were great.
I know, but that's my point. Like, first of all, regression to the mean is a thing that happens all over the place in sports, especially the NFL. When you're number one, you're very, very likely to take a step back. And while they do have an elite player at every level,
and the elite defensive coordinator.
Sure, but hold on. The other thing with Vic Fangio is That was his only season having a number one defense in the NFL. You need great players. You need talent. Vic Fangio especially needs talent to have a great defense. And they're not lacking in talent. But it's the guys around the margins. It's your Josh Sweats. It's your Milton Williams. It's your, you know, your Isaiah Rodgers, even. Your Darius Slays of the world. Your C.J. Gardner-Johnsons. All of whom we lost. That's what turns a good defense into the best defense in the league. All those guys are gone.
Well, this is the difference between Dave Dombrowski and Howie Roseman for me. I don't trust Dave Dombrowski. I trust Howie. I would trust Howie Roseman with my life. I trust Howie Roseman implicitly to go out and get the pieces. You think Howie has not put the right pieces on this defense? Howie Roseman's the best general manager in sports.
I know.
Why would
but
I not trust
Tom,
him?
Tom, he signed Bryce Huff last year.
And it didn't even matter because every other movie he made was so great.
But my point is that he's not perfect. And like,
it's close.
Sure.
Well, that's another song by Grace Jones. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you.
I'm out on it. After hearing you.
Defense could be better. Come on, Kyle.
There's zero chance the defense is going to be better.
I disagree. I think the defense can be better. Right. I think defense will be better.
Enjoy living in La La Land.
Okay.
Wait, that's what we do as fans all the time. We just had somebody call in and talk about fining folks. That's what we do as fans.
Yeah, fine Castellanos for swinging at the first pitch. That's a great idea.
Somebody at the bar is telling they're telling that story. I'm not picking on the call. I don't want you to think I'm picking on you.
I am. Kyle, no,
but that's how we are as fans.
I love it.
Castellanos, I'm sure, would love that.
No, I do wish like it was Major League. Castellanos like misjudges a fly ball or swings at the first pitch. He drops down.
That's coming out of my check.
Like, drops down, gives him 10 push-ups on the spot. That'd be great. 215-592-9494. Also, Tri Day. Give us a bad song for Tri Day today. Coming up in a few minutes, we will get to Joe Giglio's head coach list, which is causing a bit of a minor stir, I'd say, today.
It's stirring for me. Because it's like, what the hell Joe doing?
He's
on vacation.
Down. I mean,
like, what you doing?
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird thing.
Y'all ain't going to hear from me when they kick me out this dude.
What were you going to say, Kyle? It sounded like you had something, then you dialed back.
Well, I'm going to revoke Joe Giglio's Sirianni guy card. He was a born-again Sirianni guy. We put him through the gauntlet. We gave him the test at the end of the season. And he determined he was a Sirianni guy. And then he put this crap out, this nonsense.
Well, let's just get to the list
he's
now.
He's no longer a Sirianni guy.
All right, so here was Joe's list of the top coaches in the NFL. He has Andy Reid 1. I think that's fair. I mean,
B. Ray is a hell of a coach. And I'm not just saying that because he, you know, coached me, but yeah, he's a hell of a coach.
Sean McVay 2, maybe a little high, but I mean, McVay.
He's a good coach, but yeah, that's a little lofty.
He's got the most out of his talent. And again, I think the Eagles were the far superior team. The fact that the Rams are even in that game, I think speaks to McVay as a coach.
Mm.
3, Kyle Shanahan. How are we feeling about this? I'm a Shanahan guy, but the guy's choked in like multiple playoff runs.
You didn't say it. I did. I mean, I didn't say it. You did. Said that one wrong. But he's choked. He's had 2 times where he's choked in the Super Bowl.
John Harbaugh 4. John Harbaugh, another guy who coached the staff that you were on, Hugh.
I like Coach Harbaugh.
But, I mean, team hasn't won anything in a long time, and he's had one of the top 5 quarterbacks in the league.
You know what it is I like about Coach Harbaugh? It's the origin story. You know, Baltimore he wasn't their first choice. And they had, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they circled back to him for whatever reason. And he's turned it into, and he's come from a coaching family.
Right.
You know, so he's turned that into a hell of a thing for himself, man. So I don't have a problem with that.
Now,
I really don't. Because I know the origin story.
This next one I think is egregious. Sean Payton at number 5?
Just got back in the game.
Just got back in. But his last few years in New Orleans were terrible. I mean, they got slaughtered in the wild card game last year.
Who was the quarterback?
Bo Nix.
Auburn first, and
Oregon.
Then he went to Oregon.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive what he was able to do in a 1 year with Bo Nix, though.
But above Coach Sirianni?
I think there's more egregious ones than Peyton. Like, Peyton does have at least a very decorated resume.
Yeah, and Bo Nix, man. They had a pretty good team with Bo Nix. I mean,
they were good, but I think it's crazy to put him above Sirianni. Jim Harbaugh 6.
That one's worse.
Which again choked in the play. I mean, I know he's got a choker at quarterback 6 with Herbert.
Wait a minute, where's Sirianni?
He's 8. Jim Harbaugh is 6. Dan Campbell is 7.
Dan Campbell, dude.
Dan Campbell being ahead of Sirianni. They do the same thing, except Sirianni's a lot better about doing it than Campbell.
Okay. I'm going to help my partner out just a little bit because he ain't here. I'm going to help him out.
Seems like he's drinking that Haterade on vacation.
I don't know what he's doing. Like, he must be sunburned or something. You know he pale.
He's drinking, like, moonshine.
But
that's a sight, Joe drinking moonshine.
If anything, he needs to flip those two. Because they both came into the league talking crazy. Like, seriously. But Coach Sirianni is the only one that made good on his crazy.
Well, what on earth does Dan Campbell do better than Nick Sirianni?
Nothing.
Talk crazy?
Nothing.
When you start talking about biting people ankles off, man, and stuff like that, that's pretty crazy.
But
talk.
That doesn't make you a good coach.
I didn't say it did.
Yeah.
You asked me what makes him better, I told you. I said talk crazy.
That doesn't make him better.
I didn't say it did. I said you asked
what are you
what
talking
made him
about
better.
Then?
You said what does he do better, and I said talk crazy.
Okay, but what makes him a better coach than Nick Sirianni?
I didn't say he was. I said if anything, he
so
should flip those
is the
two.
Answer.
Yeah.
I just think in general, and Joe's part of this, and I do think you do need to examine taking away his Nick Sirianni card.
Oh, it's gone.
But what, like, how does he still not get this respect? Like, I get he had good coaches around him last year. I get he's got good talent. But you look at last year, that A.J. Brown situation could have ripped that team apart. I mean, we all feared it at the time. That was a legitimate thing, and I think Nick Sirianni is the reason why it didn't. I think he was able to kind of keep that thing together. That was a tumultuous time, Hugh.
Man, listen, we've gotten, and I'm not picking on Joe, because Joe put his list
pick
together.
On he, Joe. It's a disaster of a list.
But it's
terrible
just
list. Don't let him off the hook, Hugh.
I just find it interesting that we want to pick apart the head coach and his job and talk about the staff that he has or the players that he have. And when you go through the history of the NFL, it's called the Bill Walsh coaching tree for a reason. You know what I mean? It's called the Andy Reid coaching tree for a reason. That means that he had some excellent talent around him that allowed him to be successful. And it's no different with Dan Campbell. It's no different with Coach Sirianni or any other coach that we hold in high regard. And that's what irritates me. Like, when we talk about, say, just getting off topic a little bit. When we talk about quarterbacks, guys get penalized because of the talent that they have. I think that's ridiculous because every team in NFL, every team anywhere wants to put talent around good players. That's what you try to do. Howie just has been able to do it better than most. That's a fact. And when I look at Coach Sirianni and you look at the team that he put together, he's still the head coach, even though he's a bubblehead coach. And he cut his hair. He's never going to lay that down for me. But I respect that because his players responded to that. They responded to him relating to being relatable.
Right.
And allowing, for lack of a better way of saying it, social media caused him to cut his hair or whatever. Or let the media do that. So they relate to that. And in turn, they won the Super Bowl.
I just think he's shown that he's a really a good motivator and a good culture guy.
The one thing, I'm sorry, TK. I mean, because this kind of burns my biscuits. But the one thing a good coach does, and I'm gonna make it as simple as I possibly can. He makes the people around him, 53 guys, believe in whatever message he's spewing, and those 53 guys are willing to run through a brick wall for that man, put their body on the line for that man. And that's what that team did. They did what they had to do. The quarterback, for whatever you, however you want to tell the story or spin the story, he adjusted in order for that team to have success. You know, we can talk about the semantics about Saquon and all this other stuff, but the bottom line is Coach Sirianni was the guy that got this team together and got everybody to row in the same direction.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this is another thing.
Just like Dan Campbell did.
I don't understand about it is, okay, I'd assume some of what would penalize Nick Sirianni is that he's had great coaches around him. Well, Kellen Moore can't be that great because Joe has him at 30. So if Kellen Moore's 30, then, I mean, how great are the coaches that were around Nick Sirianni last year? Doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, I mean, like, and Sirianni doesn't call plays, but neither does Dan Campbell, another guy who's reliant on his coordinators. We're going to find out what the Lions look like without Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn next season. That's for sure.
Yeah. I do respect him bumping that weasel McDermott down to 17, though. That was a good move.
It's about believing in what the coach is selling, because I think back to when Andy Reid got here, Ray Rose was our coach. And for the most part, we had the same guys. Had the same exact guys. It was just a different mentality. I think for Ray Bob, he was on his way out. And they kind of knew that. And so they were kind of like, in a hockey term, skating their wing. Kind of skating their wing, just trying to, you know, make it through. Because, you know, I remember vividly them having conversations early in the season about, you know, what's going to happen, and then it going south. And Dana Bible was the offensive coordinator, and his offense, I mean, for lack of a better way of saying it, it was not good. Mm-hmm. It was not good. And Bobby Hoying having his crash out moments. But when you look at that team, the core team was the same. And Andy Reid came in with a philosophy and a message, and it changed everything. And you know, he had his blind spots and everything, but the bottom line is this. Coaches are there to motivate players to be better than they think they can be. You know what I mean? And that's what his job is, and whether you like it or not, that's what Nick Sirianni did.
Yeah.
Bottom line, Dan Campbell did the same thing. He took an underachieving Detroit defense because they were getting hurt. I remember talking to Coach Glenn when he was there. And I was like, damn, Coach, you're getting guys hurt every week. He said, but they're playing hard. That's all he can ask for. And the thing that I know about him is that he was real with those guys, and that's what they liked about it. And they liked the fact that Coach Glenn had an open-door policy, and he talked to them like men. He would have those cats over to his house for dinner. Like, stuff like that. That's what he did, and guys appreciate that. The bottom line is this, man. If you get guys to believe in you and buy into what you're selling, they'll do anything for you, because that's what football is in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I think that's what Nick Sirianni's gift is as a coach. And I think sometimes he gets punished or penalized for not being the X and O guy, but I don't think you necessarily need to be that to be a great football coach. 8, I think, is crazy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
But speaking of the Giants, who the Phillies are playing tonight, our old friend Bryce Huff now out there in San Francisco. Maybe he'll be taking in the game tonight out there. But he's with the San Francisco 49ers now.
Left that one alone, dog. He should have just left Philly. Just leave Philly alone, man. Take the ring.
Yeah.
And just go enjoy playing for the 49ers.
Yeah, just take the ring and be on your way. Could that have been that difficult for him, Hugh? The guy who you predicted to, what, set the all-time
22?
Eagles record?
22 sacks. Yeah, I thought he was going to have a hell of a year, man. He can play. He can play.
You should apologize for that take, by the way.
No,
breaking Reggie White's sack record.
That was a hot take. That was hot.
That was a joke.
That was a hot take.
We're going to have to keep a list of how many takes Hugh needs to apologize for.
I don't need to apologize for none of them.
Okay. All right. Wheeler, defense defensive. Is a luxury.
I ain't got to apologize
Huff.
For none of them.
But Bryce Huff was speaking earlier this week and talked about his time in Philly and how he kind of knew early on it wasn't going to work out here.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I'm being 100% honest with you, I wanted to trade, like, fairly early on. And just because of how things went in Philly, like, I knew pretty early on that it wasn't a fit. But, like, being a signing of that magnitude, like, being undrafted and going to getting that contract and being in Philly, like, the expectations are at an all-time high. So I knew a trade wasn't going to happen during the season. But I just kind of, like, talked to my agent about it. I was like, yeah, when it's all said and done, like, I might need to step, you know, just to be able to put myself in the best position to ball out and have a fruitful career. And there's a plethora of things that went down. I don't want to get into specifics, but
of course,
I, like, being in the league for five years last year, I'm going into my sixth right now, but being in the league for 5 years, I kind of knew what it felt like for me to be, what's the word, to be in a good situation, you know, and that's just what I was like, yeah, I gotta look out for myself and do what I think is best. So, I mean, I kind of knew where it was headed, like, fairly early on into the season, probably even training camp, if I'm being honest with you. But so when everything kind of popped off, it was just like, yeah, all right, let's get to work.
So basically, what Bryce Huff says there is, yeah, I knew in training camp this probably wasn't going to work out. I get, like, if you come to a place and the fit isn't what you thought it was going to mm-hmm. be, but if that's where your mindset is in training camp, I mean, that makes it hard to feel like he gave it a real shot here.
Well, see, this is where I think Bryce should have just didn't say anything, because you open yourself up when you say that and you leave it ambiguous like that, not ambiguity, but ambiguous. The way that he did. I've been working on that word. But here's the problem. Because here in Philadelphia, we need an explanation. Because you said that there was a lot more that went on that you don't want to get into. Well, hell, you didn't have to get into being wanted to be traded, to be totally honest. You could have just left it like, hey, man, didn't work out. Hey, I wish him the best. Hey, I'm fortunate enough to win a ring, whatever. You took that moment. I know what you did. You took the moment and you tried to get sympathy for the way your season went after you won the Super Bowl. I think that's where you probably, there was a disconnect. You won the Super Bowl. You got a ring. You didn't do what you wanted to do. It's okay. You know, it didn't work out. That's all you had. If you would have just said, hey, didn't work out, and kept it moving. Now, go to the San Francisco 49ers and ball out. That's all you had to do. And now you changed the narrative. Like, oh, it didn't work out in Philly, but you went somewhere else and you balled out. Okay, maybe it wasn't a fit. But now you've inadvertently put a bullseye on your back. Now everybody's going to be watching.
Right. And the thing is, like, you can't say that this was my mindset in training camp. Like, I knew immediately it wasn't going to work out here. Like, that makes me think, like, did he really even give it a shot here? Was he trying to do what Vic Fangio was asking him to do? Was he trying to fit in?
See, this is what I think happened. And this is me recklessly speculating like I like to do. Somewhere along the line, there was a conversation had about your role here or what your expectations were. And you didn't like it. And it automatically put you in a bad place. You took the money. I'd have took the money. With my old ass sitting right here at this radio station, somebody offered me $50 million to go rush the passer. I'm gonna pretend like I can. But the point is this: it didn't work out. No matter what you say at this point, especially after winning the Super Bowl, you sound bitter. You sound a little bitter. Let it go. Like, go play for the San Francisco 49ers and go be productive. You didn't have to say anything. I don't think you had to do an interview. You could have just said, hey, man, didn't work out in Philadelphia. I had a great time there. Unfortunately, you know, it wasn't a fit. And leave it like that.
Yeah, dude, you want a ring, just move on.
Yeah, just move on, dog.
Well,
you should have never.
He should give that ring back.
He should, but your thoughts on Bryce Huff, Kyle, besides that, he should give it back.
Well, so first of all,
he probably don't wear it, but
you should think about selling that thing, pawning it off or something. But so first of all, it wouldn't surprise me if he actually was productive in San Francisco, because now he's back with Robert Saleh.
It's
the truth.
Perspective, TK. He had 10 sacks.
Perspective
with
from
Saleh.
Kyle again.
No, but
God.
No,
he stinks.
He does stink, and he's a total loser, total fraud, and that little diatribe he went on was a total joke. My thing is, and what it reminds me of is, we don't really talk about this as much because it doesn't matter, because we got the best version of Vic Fangio and all the players bought into the Vic Fangio thing. But remember when Vic left Miami?
Yeah,
and there was things about
bad mouthing.
Yeah, like all the players were like, you know, go kick rocks and stuff like that. Like, you need to be fully bought into what Vic Fangio is selling in order for you to be productive. And Bryce Huff clearly just...
Look at that analogy that Kyle gave to that. That's a good one.
I mean, Huff clearly gave up instantly, which is loser activity.
Well, he basically said he gave up during training camp. Like, oh, yeah, I knew in training camp this wasn't going to work out. And I needed to change.
Yeah, you should have let that one ride, dog.
Yeah.
I mean, you got bad advice. I understand you feel some kind of way, but if I'm Bryce Huff, every time I look down at whichever finger you decided to put that ring on,
yeah,
I would honestly say, when you think about the NFL as a whole, because you won on both fronts, bro. You got paid. You won the Super Bowl in your fifth season in the NFL. You won the Super Bowl. And you get a chance to go resurrect your career somewhere else. How is that? How are you bitter?
He shouldn't be.
Like seriously, how are you bitter?
No, he could have just easily moved on. Like, it was a winning team. If it was a team that didn't play well, okay, I get you could say things on your way out the door. But this team won a Super Bowl.
This is where the kids need to get better advice, man. Because as petty as I am, and you know I'm petty, in that moment, the best thing to say is, hey, man, it didn't work out.
Did you make any remarks after you left Jacksonville?
Yeah. I threw salvos at the last game of the season.
Ripped Del Rio?
Oh, yeah. I was like, I don't want to be here. I'm out. I want to be out.
What are we paying for?
And Jack called me, was like, hey, man, you know, let's try to work it out. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. And then you see Hard Knocks. Yeah, and you know how he really felt.
Then they cut.
Joe and I have looked up, like, worst signings in Jacksonville history, and Hugh's on the list every single time.
And you know what?
They're not fans of Hugh Douglas in Jacksonville.
And I am not a fan of theirs, and they can kiss my whole entire ass in Jacksonville.
Is Hugh the equivalent to Bryce Huff in Jacksonville?
Probably.
Without a single doubt.
Oh, except
you didn't get a make-believe ring.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I got one when I came back to Philly, though. I mean, we didn't win at all, but I did.
Yeah, you got that NFC championship ring. That's good enough.
Yep, and then he fought to y'all.
Yeah.
I have other milestone moments.
Wasn't going to bring that up. 215-592-9494.
I have other milestone moments in my life.
Who is being more disrespected in offseason rankings? Jalen Hurts or Nick Sirianni? Ike?
It's a good question. Probably Nick Sirianni.
What do you think the vote is at? Now, you say Sirianni.
Yeah, I say Sirianni.
What do you think the voting's at?
Yeah.
The voting's at Jalen?
I don't know. What do you think?
Jalen's being disrespected. Yeah, I'll say Jalen. They probably 70% of them think Jalen's being
73.3 say Jalen.
You guys are insane.
Clearly Sirianni's being more disrespected. Now the only one I've seen, so the Pro Football Focus one had him at 8.
Right.
Giglio had him at 8.
Right.
Most lists for Jalen have him 5. Or five
been
or
a couple
six.
Of them that had like couple, seven.
Well, yeah, but even that is right.
Should be no lower than 5. Some people would say 2.
Well, if you want to say wins, wins certainly count more for a coach than they do for a quarterback. And like if you're just going to look at Jalen and say wins, then you have to look at Sirianni and just say he wins.
Yeah.
And I think Sirianni's ability to navigate hard times or controversy has shown to be
well,
really
Sirianni's
really
year is more impressive last year than Jalen's.
I think so.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Look at Jack.
He's stupid. Because there was adversity there.
Yeah.
Listen, he shaved his head.
He shaved his head. Yeah. He navigated the passing comment later in the year.
Yeah.
Navigated the Jalen Carter little thing in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
I did yell at fans after the Browns game, but it's okay. We all have bad moments.
Battle, yeah.
Had ups and downs.
Yeah. And who knows?
Sure.
That could have been a positive.
I think.
Well, in fairness to him about that, he wasn't in a combative situation with a fan. Wasn't it more or less?
No, it was.
He was reassuring the fan.
No.
That he was running the ball.
Well, yeah, but he was yelling at them because they were yelling at him to run the ball, and he
yelled. But I mean, he wasn't yelling explicits at him like curse words.
I don't know.
You think so?
I could have seen him letting one fly. You kidding me?
Yeah,
I didn't see that.
We saw a very different.
Then he got ripped from bringing his kid to the podium.
Yep.
Well, I mean, he was right in that. You don't bring your kids to the podium after you barely beat the Browns in week 6 or whatever. It's like, come on, wait for winning the Super Bowl, then bring the kids up there.
And Sirianni's had a great offseason.
He has.
Great offseason.
I think the right rank for Sirianni is somewhere around that 6 number. I think that the problem with this.
Nuts.
Well, 5-6. That feels about
right. How about 3? 2 or 3?
I like Sirianni.
So we have Andy 1. Andy
yes. 1. And there's an argument between he and Sean McVay.
Well, I put McVay ahead of him.
Okay.
Right, Spikes
Rams. I'll get McVay. I like Sean McVay.
I would rather have Jim Harbaugh. Now, here's the thing on rankings.
That's different than what somebody has done.
Yes.
And where they deserve to be ranked at.
Right. Because you would probably agree there too, right? That you would rather have Jim Harbaugh.
Not me.
You wouldn't?
No.
Okay. But you could see why somebody would say that.
Sure.
It's really the what's his face in Denver?
Mm-hmm. Sean Payton,
the Mike Tomlins,
Kyle Shanahan.
Now Shanahan, I can understand. I think there's a better argument for Shanahan than there is for Tomlin or John Harbaugh mm-hmm. or Denver or Sean Payton. I think
there's a better argument for Shanahan.
Yeah, I think so. At least currently,
over those guys.
Yes,
but not over Sirianni.
No. I would have Sirianni over Shanahan, but I think they're in the same group. Okay. I think
those are good coaches. I just think he's ahead of those guys.
Yeah.
Based on his resume.
I think that's fair. I think the only two that are clear are Andy and, for me, Sean McVay.
Okay.
Those are the only two that are clear. Everybody else is sort of
Because at least Sean McVay's resume matches.
Absolutely.
And he's a play caller.
Absolutely.
And he's had to start over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's had to start over with new talent, and he had to trade for a quarterback. He took two different quarterbacks to the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, so, and he's the one who fixed Jared Goff. He didn't draft Jared Goff. He fixed him.
Right.
And then traded him for Matthew Stafford and then won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And we've seen what they've done. He drafted Cooper Kupp in the fourth round. He got Puka Nacua in mid-round. So, I like Sean McVay.
And then my thing on Shanahan is.
And he's won.
Yes, he
I
has.
I like Sean McVay.
Now, Shanahan has not won the Super Bowl,
yep. But he's been there twice.
With Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yes.
And like, I know they have a talented team. Absolutely. But no,
but still, with those two quarterbacks.
Yeah. No team's getting the Super Bowl without being talented.
Yeah.
For sure. But to do that with those two quarterbacks, if that coach was here, we would think of that guy as a genius.
Oh, yeah, I give him credit. Yeah. Yeah. No. Oh, yeah, yeah I give him credit. I can't have Dan Campbell in front of Nick Sirianni.
No. Well, that Giglio had Dan Campbell in front of Sirianni.
I like Dan Campbell. What the hell has he done better than Sirianni?
He's a good coach. Dan Campbell's a good coach.
And they're the same coach.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, and he's carried by coordinators.
I think.
Well, we're about to find out. And Nick Sirianni's had three coordinators.
Yeah. Stock down.
I think the thing with Sirianni is you can have him in the group with a bunch of different guys, but if you do, then you have to look at recent success. And in that case, Sirianni has to move to the front of those guys.
Yeah.
That's why I think I might take Kyle Shanahan over him, mm-hmm. but if you're doing a ranking right now, you can't put Kyle Shanahan over him.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think play calling sometimes is too much weight placed on just play calling.
Yes, I agree. It means something. It definitely means something. Because, by the way, even when you're building a coaching room, that is one thing you don't have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder if you have to go find an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator. In the cases of Shanahan and McVay, you already know one of those is marked off with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yep.
And I think that's a huge advantage. But Sirianni, like, to say that Hurts has been disrespected in those things more than Sirianni has, I think is crazy. I think most of the Hurts disrespect has come from the guys who you expect to disrespect him.
Yeah.
Like Chris Sims, you know, like you expect. Like
Spike. And
this show.
And Jack.
Yeah.
I have him like seven.
In the city.
No.
Reluctantly.
Well, it's still seven. It is what it is. The number is the number. All right? 215. Jeez, give me hell. 215. I can't do anything right.
You're good.
I have Baker ahead of him. Give me a break.
There it is.
Baker and
41
Stafford.
41 touchdowns last year.
Baker and Stafford. Yeah. Some people forget. There is one Eagle who is not on anyone's top 11 list or
former
Eagle.
Could be on the top 11 bust list.
Could. Bryce Huff. So Bryce did – where was this where Bryce Huff
was? It was on some San Francisco 49ers podcast.
Okay. Yeah,
he thought we weren't going to hear it.
Yeah. Wrong town, pal.
Here's what Bryce Huff had to say.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I'm being 100% honest with you, I wanted to trade, like, fairly early on. And just because of how things went in Philly, like, I knew pretty early on that it wasn't a fit. But, like, being a signing – of that magnitude, like being undrafted and going and getting that contract and being in Philly, like the expectations are at an all-time high. So I knew a trade wasn't going to happen during the season. But I just kind of like talked to my agent about it. I was like, yeah, when it's all said and done, like I might need to step, you know, just to be able to put myself in the best position to ball out and have a fruitful career. And there's a plethora of things that went down. I don't want to get into specifics, but
of course,
I like being in the league for five years last year. I'm going into my sixth right now, but being in the league for 5 years, I kind of knew what it felt like for me to be, what's the word, to be in a good situation, you know. And that's just what I was like, yeah, I gotta look out for myself and do what I think is best. So, I mean, I kind of knew where it was headed, like fairly early on into the season, but probably even training camp, if I'm being honest with you. But so when everything kind of popped off, it was just like, yeah, all right, let's get to work.
All right. I'm trying not to go viral here. I am. Dude, if you don't shut the hell up, they paid you a boatload of money to come here. You're an undrafted player that had never been a proven starter. They paid you as if you were a proven every down player. That's how they paid you last year. And for you to talk about, you knew fairly early that this wasn't a good fit and you didn't want to be here and you wanted to get traded, but you knew it wouldn't happen during the season. Here's what I say to that. You lack a competitive fire, my guy, because I don't know what they asked you to do down there. I don't know what Vic Fangio asked you to do that you didn't like. Maybe they asked you to be a complete football player instead of a third down pass specialist that comes in when it's an obvious passing situation. You can just pin your ears back and chase the quarterback. Maybe they asked you to do a little more than just that because they paid you damn good money. Right? If you wanted to get paid like a specialist, then they could have paid you $3, $4 million and say, you're just going to be our third down guy. We'll bring you in, let everybody else do the work, get us the third and long, and then we'll turn you loose like they did in New York. See, you were something of a found jewel in New York. So, like, when the coaches discover a guy that everyone else passed on and they helped you develop, and you turn into a decent player, you become like the apple of their eye. Because they felt like they saw something in you that no one else did, even though they didn't want to pay you. Even though they were smart enough to know you're not that guy, so you go get your money somewhere else. And now we'll take you back because somebody else paid you. And being on the 49ers, you're going to play for what? I don't know, veteran minimum or whatever it is. They're not going to pay you any money out there to go play out there. The thing that irritated me by hearing him talk about that is the lack of wanting to fight to prove that he was what they thought he was.
That he could do what they wanted him to do.
What they wanted you to do.
It seems like he got here, they said, you should do that. And he's like, well, I don't want to do that. And then that was it.
Thank you.
You know?
That's exactly what it sounds like to me.
Yep.
Is that he was out once he realized he wasn't going to get to play the way he is accustomed to playing when he was with the Jets in that defense. They're asking you to do a little bit more, brother. They paid you to do a little bit more.
Give it a try.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what irritated me, that he was already checked out and was ready to go.
The only question I have about Bryce Huff, which yes, does not change any of the things that you said, but I think about, is one, Howie Roseman's decision to sign a guy who was not going to be a fit in, or at least not shown he was a fit in Vic Fangio's system. That is the first thing. And the second thing that we'll never know is the conversations between Bryce Huff's agent and Howie Roseman saying, hey, my guy is this, and historically Vic is this.
Right.
Is my guy going to get a chance to do what my guy does? And that is I think it would be a different situation now that Howie and Vic have worked together for a year successfully, knowing what he knows. But I also wonder if Bryce Huff got here, think again, not excusing, once you get here, like this is a good situation with good players, chance to win the Super Bowl, do whatever you can. But I wonder if he got here thinking, hey, they're going to let me do this.
They're going to use me this way.
And then they're using me that way. And the only credit I'll give him, one small amount of credit, mm-hmm. is we never heard the entire time Bryce Huff's pissed off. Like, there was never a leak or
yeah, but that speaks to his competitive nature, though.
No, it doesn't.
You don't think so?
No.
I would think if he was, like, mad that he wasn't... I don't sense a guy that was mad he wasn't on the field and trying to fight
That's probably true.
Tooth and nail to get
oh,
on
I see it. What you're saying. Yeah. You're saying it speaks to his competitive nature that he didn't complain
that he didn't
about
bitch.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't... The funny thing is, this kid was here, and I don't remember anything significant he ever said while he was here. So it's,
or
it's,
did. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's not like he had a whole lot to say. My only thing is, I can understand you feeling like, you know what, I'm not being used to the best of my ability. I get that. I will also tell you, the sense that I got was that he was also unwilling to compromise.
100%
and
agree on that.
Embrace
yes.
what they were asking him to do.
At least, like every other guy, yeah. Like every other guy here.
Yes.
Every other guy on the defensive line got better.
That's my only thing. So, he may go out there and he's playing with Robert Saleh again, so he feels comfortable. And
he'll have a bunch of sacks. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Mentally, he's probably in the right place. But I hear that. And I hear that and I say, dude, you were an undrafted player 4 years ago, 5 years ago. You got a chance to realize your dream by getting invited to a camp, making a team. And then it went past your wildest dreams. You got financial security. Let me throw a cherry on top of that. You got to experience something that a lot of players wish they had the opportunity to experience.
Bryce Huff is a Super Bowl champion.
Yes, brother. You yeah. are a Super Bowl champion. You are attached with this team forever. For good or bad. You're attached to this team. What about the guys you were in the locker room with every day? Did you make any friends? What about the brotherhood? See, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like to me he may have kept to himself, right? Didn't necessarily ingratiate himself with everyone else because, in his own words, I knew this wasn't going to work early.
He gave up right away.
He gave up early. So how much did he buy into, you know what I'm saying, being a part of this team? While they were winning, by the way. I mean, this is a Super Bowl winning team, and you're still over here pouting about what?
And they all seem to like each other. I mean, like on the defensive side.
Everybody yeah. on the team liked each other. Yeah. It didn't seem like Bryce Huff didn't have any relationship here.
It just, if Brandon Graham in year 17 can figure out a way to be a productive player, and that's not a dismissal of Brandon Graham, but
yeah,
like,
but you're right.
If he's like, I have a different defensive coordinator. If Jalix Hunt, a third round pick, who was playing, you know, not major college football, could work his way into being a productive edge on this football team. Mm-hmm. Something just tells me that if Bryce Huff tried, he would have been able to figure out how to be productive, yeah. you know, in some way.
You've been listening to the best of the Eagles on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.